League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Before the podcast starts, I'd like to draw your attention to something I think you'd find of interest if you're an active investor and looking for growth stocks. This afternoon at 4 p.m, there's a question and answer session with Clive Beattie, who's the acting chief executive officer of On The Market. And they've risen by over 200% in the last 5 months. Is it sustainable? Well, they're nowhere near valued as highly as the sort of market leader Rightmove, but their market share is very big. It's growing. So it's worth asking Clive that question. I think a lot of upside in that company. It's risen very quickly of late, of course. May need to consolidate, but it's a big market, let's be honest. So all you need to do is go to voxmarkets.co.uk and you'll see there an article. Just click on the link, register with your email address, and you can join the rest of the people there on the call with Clive Beattie, acting CEO of On The Market.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 20th of August 2020. On the podcast today, John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, talks about the launch of a new virtual racing website, that's racinggames.gg, and also provides an update on the digital media business. Also, I have Alan Sellers, Executive Chairman, and Mark Bringlow, Chief Financial Officer of Anexo Group, ANX ticker there, and the guys discuss some of the highlights from their interim results. Plus, Ian Roberts, Chief Executive Officer of True Spine Technologies, TSP, and Ian explains the business model on the first day as a publicly listed company. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks gaming companies, Gfinity, Bidstack, Team 17. And as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 lists of both these. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Clark, CEO of Gfinity, G-F-I-N is ticker. John, thanks for joining me.
Pleased to be here.
Yeah, busy week this week. You had two bits of significant news out, and we'll discuss that and talk it all through. But as always, John, I don't hate to assume people know exactly what Gfinity is. So just give us a brief summary as to what it is, please.
Of course. Yeah, Gfinity is a modern esports company that we're focused in three areas. Firstly, our digital media group. Secondly, our joint ventures with leading organisations such as Abu Dhabi Motorsport Management. And thirdly, building and growing communities with gamers for others like Formula One and the Premier League.
Yeah, okay. Well, today you launched a new website, racinggames.dg. We'll talk about that. But on Tuesday, let's go back there. You gave an update on the performance of the Gfinity media or digital media group. And today, more news, like I said, this space. So why so much activity at the moment then, John?
Yeah, look, in March, we set out our new sharpened strategic focus of the business. And as I say, we focused on three pillars where we already had traction and we had a competitive advantage. And the Gfinity Digital Media Group is one of those pillars, which we're expecting to generate $2 million in this financial year and push us on our target of profitability in 2021 Q1. So we, in that period, we've added partnerships with organizations like Vanatus and Kinetics, who are helping to maximize the opportunities through two areas, really, through programmatic ads, Which is sort of driving up our CPMs and the value of our users, and direct campaigns and video players. You know, for people like Samsung, if you go on our sites today, you'll see Samsung, a new campaign from Samsung's there. The fact that Activision Blizzard are bringing back their campaigns and sort of doing wraparounds, if you, or rich media takeovers of the site. So that's been growing, and also e-commerce, which is the sort of CPAs. Which is really starting to kick off as well. So across the Gfinity Digital Media Group, an important strategic pillar for the business, and is growing and is sort of really starting to perform well.
Yeah, do you know what? I mean, the growth of that is you know, breathtaking, really, when you think of it. I mean, I don't know any business in the world who wouldn't have liked to say, you know, to start something that didn't exist literally, 12 months ago. And from get-go, this is, what I say, by June next year, you're hoping to generate $2 million of revenue, an extra revenue stream you just found, and you've obviously cultivated and worked hard on. But literally, it's now going to be worth almost $2 million in June 2021. That's amazing, and that's a growth from June 2019, unique visitors 1.3 million, June 2020, 10 million. That growth is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and these things don't happen by chance. It's we've got a great team of professionals in place that wake up every day and think about winning and coming up with smart new ideas and not losing sight of perhaps what the most important thing is, which is delivering content that gamers want to engage with, come back with, and enjoy. Mm-hmm. And you know, so we've done a great and the team's done a great job of building the sites, you're building domain authority, which is very important, which we'll come on to in a minute. Once you get domain authority, that means that you're able to that sites share pages, and that's what helps you grow quicker. So you know, the team know what they're doing. They've got a good strategy and plan in place, and they're following it. And we're starting to see the results as a consequence.
Yeah, and I said just one pillar of the business here. Like you say, you've got three pillars here. And it's like I said, the media business is what you own. It's not a service to somebody else. It's what you own. So it's very valuable. And in the update, by the way, you called the growth of the US audience. And now we all know the US is big, but why is it important to you?
Yeah, the US audience for Gfinity esports sites is over 50%, and that's growing. And then for real sport, it's over 30% as well. And so we're fueling the growth in this area. We brought a new editor, a US editor, on board. That's, you know, an influencer in his own right, brings audience with him. But the reason we're doing this is because the US is obviously a major advertising market, and so this means that our strong user base is highly valuable, which allows us to charge a higher rate for brands to access them, which drives up, as I mentioned, our CPM is increasing on a daily, weekly basis. So that's good. So as the numbers grow and the length of time that our users spend on the sites, through deepened engagement, so the value of our users increase, and that's very important when you're driving sort of programmatic ads and those sort of campaigns I mentioned beforehand for Samsung and the likes of Activision Blizzard, which are running and have been running, which are sort of site takeovers and rich media, which you're able to generate a higher fee for.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, talk about how Gfinity Plus is performing, but just give a brief introduction. What is Gfinity Plus? If people not aware.
Yeah, so if we announced this 6 weeks ago, and this is our strategy was always, you mentioned beforehand, of getting from around 1 million users to over 10 million and growing on our websites, and you know, we also have over 30 million additional on a month on our social channels as well. But the Gfinity Plus was specifically say, once you've got the number of users, how do we get deepen engagement to increase the time they spend on the site, and as I mentioned, that drives up the value of each of those users. So Gfinity is our tool, Plus is our tool to do that. And I, you know, I encourage you, you know, if you, especially with your children, Justin, if you've got you love gaming and buy games, I encourage you to go on the sign up on the site and take advantage of the top cashback offers that we have going through there, which are regularly giving £15 off top new games. But in addition to the offers, you know, we've now sort of launched the commenting functionality. And there's two important points to make on commenting. Firstly, your commenting is proven to keep people on the site for longer. So a lot of people read for a while and eventually feel the confidence to start writing. It gives you the opportunity to connect closer to the writers, the articles, tell them what you think, give ideas. And so once they do that, they deepen engagement, spend more time, drives up value. So that's why that's important. And the second area of why this is important for us is that the commenting tech that's being used is our proprietary tech IP that ultimately we're in the position to license to other websites in the future. So, you know, in this process, we learn a lot the whole time that we're doing this, and we're taking those learnings and packaging those in a way that then can become valuable for other sites to use in a very turnkey manner. It's early days, but you know the signs are, you know, all pointing towards increased engagement, and once we get there, that's good for our business.
I like what you're building, and it's actually you are building it, and it's starting to get traction, but it's building it. And I likened it. I talked to somebody else, and I said I likened this sort of flywheel idea. If anyone knows what flywheel is, a big sort of metal wheel, and it takes a bit of effort to get it going. But once it's going, you get the momentum there. You get it faster and faster. It keeps spinning faster and faster. You know, it's that kind of thing. And you've often mentioned when you come on here, actually, Q4. Now, Q4 will be quite important for you. Why is that? For people not familiar with the gaming scene, why is Q4 quite important this year?
Yeah, I think it's important because first off, it's new consoles come out. So I believe most probably 6 years ago was the last PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And so, so what you have is, and with new consoles coming out, that means PlayStation and Xbox are, you know, put a lot of energy and marketing sort of spend behind their activities. And if you want to reach gamers, then we have built a number of channels within the Gfinity Digital Media Group to be able to do that. So first off, you've got new consoles, which means that there will be a big spend in the lead up to the holidays and the big November peak period of selling, that will go through into the early part of next year and first quarter next year as well. Secondly, that as a result of that, you have a lot of new games coming out. And so those new games are being built for the new consoles, and that will happen. Is kicking off now, and will run through next. It will run through next year, and you also get peripherals. For the headsets and different things and controllers that people are going to want, the gamers want to use, and so that are again built, designed for the consoles. So you all of a sudden you have three big areas of activity and spend, a marketing activity that is starting to kick off now, and that's going to run through. And our work has been done with the Gfinity Digital Media Group has all been designed to optimize our sites and be ready for this period, so that the brands start to, when they think about how we connect with gamers, they start to think about Gfinity as one of their options.
Okay, let's turn to today's news, the launch of racinggames.gg. Why have you chosen to focus on virtual racing then, John?
Yeah, we've spoken about before the virtual racing is a sweet spot for Gfinity. We have multi-year agreement with Formula One on the Formula One esports. Recently announced our relationship with Abu Dhabi Motorsport Management to create the global racing series, of which the V10 R League is the first product that we've built. And so, and now we're sort of taking that stage further and creating a portal with racinggames.gg to be able to sort of fill the need of and the pent up demand for great content around virtual racing. So we're building a portfolio of websites for gamers, and we have domain authority with Google, which means that we're able to increase the number of page links from one site to another. So once you have that authority, then it means that you're able to connect your sites more frequently and easier. And if you do that, it means you can grow your user base quickly. So, and then once we, you know, what we know is once we've got users, we can find smart ways to monetize. So racinggames.gg is going to become another valuable revenue generating asset for a company. But it will only do that as long as we make sure we meet the needs of the gamers, come up with great content, great articles, insightful opinion pieces, outstanding videos, etc., etc. We get that right, then we have an opportunity to build something again, very, very valuable. And because of our expertise in the racing and creating great racing content already, and building tournaments and building shows, and getting real good insight into the mindset of what makes a virtual racing gamer tick, then we have every chance to be successful here.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that, getting this big user base. How long do you think it'll take you to generate a large user base to the point where it's driving, good revenues, significant revenues?
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight. But at the same time, when you've got the domain authority that we have for our existing sites, then it gives us an opportunity to fast track the growth. So it's going to take us a number of months. But we deliver excellent content. Once we deliver excellent content and start to get the users coming back, then we already have over 500,000 users on our existing sites that are virtual racing focused content seekers. Mm-hmm. So we'll find smart ways of using the links to bring those people into this other world, even broader world of virtual racing. And once we do that, then we can utilize our relationships with Vanatus and Kinetics that help us with selling our advertising and doing great video and content into the sites. So nothing's ever guaranteed, but we're going into a space where we've got a clear competitive advantage and where we've got momentum. And so by adding racing games.gg to the Gfinity Digital Media Group, it gives us another lever in which to work with to drive value and monetization of our assets.
Yeah. And just one final question, just quickly, because it's getting close to now the launch of the first sort of V10R League race. So you've announced all the teams now, haven't you?
Yeah, so the teams have been announced. It's a great roster of eight teams. I encourage people to go onto the V10R League website and look at that and see the idea of having Ford and Porsche and BMW as well as Williams and a whole host of other top esports teams and drivers, the best drivers in the world, driving a new virtual car that's been created, which is the fastest out there with a throbbing V10 engine. Which, if you're from that world and you like that, I encourage you to turn the volume up loud and enjoy it.
It's impressive. I did a video on the weekend. I covered it, and it's virtually, I use that word, but I mean it's almost indistinguishable from real, and it looks so good. It sounds so good.
Yeah, the car's great. The Assetto Corsa, the game is phenomenal. And I think what we've spoken before, but it's important to reiterate the point, which is, it's about formats, and competitive gaming formats are what will ultimately be what goes on. What makes broadcasters wants to show it, and that's why when you look at the traditional sort of virtual racing, going around a track for long races, incredible skills, but you say, okay, well, how could we do that slightly differently? How could you make that slightly more interesting for an audience that maybe will be looking for more snack sized racing competitions? And so then all of a sudden you do a sprints, you do relays, you do first past the post, and different strategies that come involved, and not having races more than three laps of a track. All of a sudden, you change the game, and you bring in you give this opportunity to bring more people in. So this is really an exciting product, and we work with a great partner in Abu Dhabi Motorsport Management that they've got their own team. Yaz Heat is in there, and they're building their own expertise in virtual racing and esports with great drivers. And I think people are going to see the first season in early September, and we'll we can't wait for season two because it's different.
Yeah, but you
it's
know,
not
you're
what
right.
you expect.
No, exactly. It's doing it virtually. I mean, you know, you're so flexible on format. Like I said, you've got here head to head. There's one there. There's a relay race, a sprint race. And one of the things I find a little bit tedious about, you know, watching real Formula One is like the 150 odd laps doing the same drag on this. And it, of course, it costs them so much money to change the format. They can't really because they can't be that flexible. With this kind of thing, they can change it very well, can't they? They can change it, you know, within seconds, within days. A bit of a problem. But as far as you know, sort of on the investor side of things, you announced you're going to be announcing what deals on this or broadcast and brand rights multi-year deals soon, or is that going to happen soon?
I think we'll hopefully be in a position to come back out to the market with some exciting and interesting developments in that, and we're working hard on all those activities. So watch this space on that one. But going back to your point, yeah, you're right. You know, you're operating in the virtual space, then there are, and you're in control of what you're creating, like we are in this instance. There is really very, very few restrictions. You know, you can do lots of different things, and I think that's what then becomes attractive to broadcasters and become attractive to other commercial partners. So, very, very interesting. We're creating something that's new; it's not been seen before. In those sort of situations, you've got to find the right partners with you that share the vision and grow with you. And I think that's what we're doing.
Excellent stuff. Marvellous. Okay, as always, quickly, three reasons then. In summary, John, if someone's not following you on Vox Markets, three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add Gfinity to their watch list.
Okay, the Gfinity Digital Media Group's primed and ready to take advantage of big Q3 and Q4 and the first quarter of next year of ad spend and e-commerce opportunities. We've got a very clear strategic direction and focus on excellent implementation, and we're driven to deliver on our target of moving into profitability in Q1 of 2021 calendar year.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, John. Speak soon.
Lovely. Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Sellers, Executive Chairman, and Mark Bringlow, Chief Financial Officer of Anexo Group. ANX is the ticker there. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Our pleasure.
Now, you've just released your interim results, and we'll dig into that and also discuss the outlook and how business is. But before we do that, if someone's listening, not familiar with Anexo Group, could you please summarise what the business is about, please?
Yeah, I'll do that. Essentially, Anexo is a one-stop shop for the victims of non-fault road traffic accidents. And we basically cover the full client journey in arranging the repairs to their vehicle or recovering the value of their vehicle off the at-fault party. We provide a hire vehicle whilst the vehicle's off the road, and then we recover those assets and any of the client's losses through the court process. So it's a fully integrated one-stop shop.
Understood. Okay, so you released your interim results on the 13th. That was for the period for the 6 months, of course, ended the 30th of June. So take us through some of the highlights, if you could, guys.
Of course. It's Mark here, the CFO. So as you can see from our results, revenue was broadly flat period on period, albeit we were originally expecting quite a large increase following significant investment in our legal services business. COVID's obviously impacted us, but not as much as it's infected lots of other people and businesses. So revenues were broadly 15 to 20% below where we would originally have anticipated them being. And that's obviously therefore impacted our PBT, which dropped from 10.8 million down to 6.7 million. One of the most important factors in that decline is the continued investment. Legal services salary costs increased from just broadly 6 million in the first half of 19 to 8.8 million in the first half of 2020 as we continue to grow our teams both across the Liverpool and Bolton offices, now looking to open another office in Leeds to continue that investment.
Excellent stuff, excellent stuff. And I see your fleet numbers were down in the first half but have now recovered. Why is that?
Well, as you'll be very much aware, first couple of weeks in April, we saw a significant drop off in activity as the number of vehicles and people on the road declined sharply as people were all working from home. A large proportion of our business is based around the courier market, food delivery, parcel delivery, and a large proportion of those vehicles are motorcycles. So as people were staying at home, we've seen a sharp rise in the number of vehicles we've been providing to the courier community, as I say, particularly around the motorcycle side of business. And activity levels initially dropped by around 75% from where we would originally expect them to be in April. But as we sit here today, they're now ahead of our own internal expectations and have recovered very, very quickly post those first few weeks of April.
Yeah, excellent stuff. I see you're continuing to expand the legal services division by hiring more staff. So how does that, you know, contribute to the growth of the business then?
Yeah, absolutely. Essentially, the legal services or the firm of solicitors is the cash collector for the group. So the more cash they collect, the better it is, you know, in terms of earnings and receipts for the group as a whole.
And that was one of the key positives, really, from our first 6 months of 2020, is the continued uptick in those cash collections. Cash collections increased from just over 36 million to almost 48 million period on period. So an increase of nearly 31% as we've continued to drive value from the investment in those legal services staff.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is an interesting bit. Can you explain your involvement in the VW emissions case and what this could mean for the company?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, we act on behalf of over 10,000 clients, which is increasing on a daily basis, in the VW and other manufacturers' emissions scandal, which is where VW and others essentially inserted devices into vehicles to cheat the emissions figures. There's been settlements around the world, and we're part of bringing a claim in the UK against VW. From our perspective, it is potentially highly lucrative, because if the claim is successful, which we anticipate it will be, we recover a large amount of income for the group and also compensation for the client.
Yeah, I see, yeah. And you raised some cash in May. What are you going to spend it on?
Yeah, we have lots of opportunities with the money we raise. Essentially, initially, we've invested in acquisition of VW emissions cases. Mm-hmm. We're also looking to make acquisitions in legal services and credit hire.
Well, so I assume after that raising and your balance sheet is quite strong, is it at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key aspects to draw from our analysis, as people will see from our half-year results, is that notwithstanding the COVID position, we turned our group from a large cash absorber into a cash generative position, and that was certainly the target for us during 2020.
Yeah.
So first quarter, we were cash generative, and notwithstanding all the issues that COVID gave us around the court system and cash settlements and people working from home, we were cash generative in Q2 as well. And as you've just alluded to, we raised broadly 7 million after expenses in May from raising capital from the market with the issue of 6 million shares. We drew some funding from a litigation specialist funder to help support the investment in VW, which could be as much as £4 million investment this year in driving that those case acquisition profile further through. And we also secured £5 million through the government C-bill scheme, just to really, as you say, strengthen that balance sheet position.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of June, we had broadly £16 million worth of headroom in our funding facilities and cash in the bank. So a fantastic position for us to be in now that we're in a cash generative position, really taking advantage of some of those opportunities that we foresee.
Absolutely. And generally, when I speak to AIM companies, I wouldn't even ask this question because it's non-existent. But what's your dividend policy?
Yeah, our policy is a progressive policy. But obviously, as we can become more and more cash generative, we hope to increase that going forward.
Excellent stuff. Okay, guys, every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. And of course, several people have to hit that follow button on your page to get on that list. Yeah. So to get on that list right now, if someone likes the sound of what you're doing here but are not following you, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I think the first thing is that we're significantly undervalued. And I think it's taken the markets a little time to understand what we actually do and how we do it. As Mark alluded to before, we're significantly cash generative now, and also, as you mentioned before, we pay a dividend.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Roberts, Chief Executive Officer of TruSpine Technologies. TSP is the ticker there. Ian, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
Very big day for you, listening on the stock market, and we'll get into why you've done that in a bit. But before we start, Ian, of course, you're brand new to the market, so I assume there's lots of investors out there wanting to know your story. So can you give us a brief overview as to what TruSpine's all about, please?
Yeah, TruSpine intend to disrupt the massive sort of $10 billion plus dollar a year spinal stabilization market in a very unique way. There hasn't been a lot of changes in technology for 30 years other than aesthetically. We intend to disrupt that market with a unique product that doesn't alter the bony anatomy in any way, therefore makes it more accessible to patients, but also, you know, more prone for surgeons to actually want to use our product rather than as a last resort.
Yeah, yeah. And how long have you been going for?
Since the back end of 2014.
Okay, I see. Okay, reading through some of the documents, it looks like you're mainly US focused, and you got food and drug approvals pending. So, are you planning to stay there? Or you expand out of the US?
We certainly will. I mean, the US accounts for about 54% of the spinal stabilization market, hence it is very, very important to us. But the FDA approval is key because that gives us global access, if you like. The FDA approval is accepted globally. So whilst the US is a very important market to us and will be the first market where we launch, we also have plans in Asia, the Far East, South America, Europe. You know, we will become global, you know, sort of by 2022.
Yeah, and like I said, congratulations on the listing. First day your shares have been traded publicly. So why go public now then, Ian?
The reason we decided to go public was we understand that our product development, which is you know, relatively expensive, to commercialize globally, as we've just discussed, we will need significant money. And partnering with Aquis allows us the flexibility to do that, you know, in a public environment rather than a private raise the way we've done so far.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so how much have you raised and how are you looking to spend the money?
The money is, let's see, we've raised about £1.5 million. We're actually oversubscribed on our initial IPO. And the money is really to develop the products. We have three key products initially in development. And as you can imagine, each of those products, you know, cost a considerable amount of money to develop. There's considerable testing, biomechanical testing, and obviously the process. So the initial raise is to bring the products to market, get all our approvals ready for our next push, which will be around our commercialization plans.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And you said you are looking to commercialize this. So explain exactly where you are in the product development at the moment.
Okay, well, we've had our pre-approval from the FDA. So within an FDA approval process, you have to do what's known as a pre-approval or a Q-sub. Mm-hmm. So we had that submitted earlier in the year, and we had a response from the FDA towards the end of July, actually, and they're very comfortable with our product, our design, and more importantly, our testing partners. You know, we consider that our testing partners in the US are the gold standard in terms of biomechanical testing and very highly regarded by the FDA. So the situation is now that we literally are going into our final biomechanical testing, which isn't just around the strength of the product and the pullout strength, but it's the biggest time consumer is our cycle testing. So we have to replicate what the spine will do over sort of 500,000 actions, movements, and that's bench tested and takes a considerable amount of time to prove that the efficacy of the product, that it will actually work. Because at the end of the day, you know, let's not forget there's a patient, you know, going to be involved here. This isn't necessarily a consumer product. This is something that's designed to massively improve patients' lives.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So that's where we're at in terms of testing. We expect to have our full approval by quarter one, 2021.
I see. Okay, so big milestone there. Now, I've always I've always been taught there's two parts to proof of concept. That's, does the product work, and is the demand? Is the market a big market? Is it growing? Is the demand for the product? So, tell us about the spinal, market size and how this is significant for you.
Okay, well, globally, the market is worth over $10 billion.
That's per year, is it?
That's per annum, yeah. And that's growing at anywhere between 8 and 10%, purely and simply because people are living longer, you know. So the aging population means that, you know, more people have considerable back pain and back trouble. So the market is actually very much a growth market. You know, in terms of what you're saying, does our concept work? Well, biomechanically and in cadaver labs, you know, it's been proven to be significantly stronger than anything currently on the market, as well as being, you know, considerably easier and quicker to actually implant. So the market is growing. The market's also going to grow because what we class as emerging markets, so less developed markets like Asia and Africa, you know, they're realizing that they have to deal with the back problems that are affecting their elderly population as well. You know, so they're getting themselves up to the same standard as Europe and the US in terms of their technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, just before we came on, I said, you know, you show me someone above the age of 50 who doesn't have a back problem, who's never had one, then I'll show you a robot. Because, it's synonymous, isn't it? Again, out of a chair, where at a certain age, you go, oh, my back. So there's always that strain on the back. So we know the market's massive, isn't it, really? Yeah?
It is, but, you know, I've worked in orthopedics for many, many years. And when you actually see some of the patients that, I don't mean to sound alarmist, but patients that have got to the end of their tether, they're normally on opioids, they've had treatment, it hasn't worked. The highest cause of death with these patients is suicide. Because they ultimately, they just don't see a future or a way out of living without pain. You know, so it's very emotive a product for me and my team, because obviously, you know, the bottom line is we want to help those patients as quickly as we possibly can.
Absolutely. Okay. Right, Ian. Well, every day on the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets platform. To get there, someone has hit that follow button several times. Not one person, but many people, of course. But to get in that list, if someone likes the progress you're making here, likes the tech you've got, but are not yet following you, which is acceptable because you're new to the market, give them three quick reasons why they'd hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
I think we're a disruptive company, and what I mean by that is we're not a Me Too company. We're not bringing out a product that's just similar to something else on the market. We will absolutely disrupt the spinal stabilization market. As an investor, the huge kicking point really for us is quarter one of next year when we get our FDA approval. The only downside for us, to be honest, is that, you know, is manufacturing enough for the demand that we know is already out there. So number one is FDA approval. Number two is what we actually do for the patient in terms of this will be more accessible to more patients with less complications, less risk of infection. And the third is ultimately, you know, what it does for surgeons. It reduces the operating theatre time by at least half. It will allow surgeons to use this, you know, for more patients rather than as a last resort. And those are the three real reasons why we believe, you know, TruSpine is going to be on people's radar moving forward.
Excellent stuff, Ian. Congratulations on the listing today, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al?
I'm fine, thanks, Josh. Yeah, had a great day out yesterday. Popped into Brighton, and although it was chucking down with rain, we sat socially distanced in a bar on the seafront there opposite the West Pier, and just great to catch up with some old friends and work colleagues again. And it was a sense of perhaps some sort of return to normality after this extended lockdown period. But really, really good. That's it. Yeah.
You know what? I'm just really a bit annoyed about the government. I know a lot of governments in the world, apparently, I've heard that are all the same, pretty much. Don't know what they're doing. They're just making, you know, decisions on the hoof because they have no idea, and a lot of them are not unconsidered. And at the moment, I understand. I agree with the test and tracing and all this stuff.
Yep.
But we know enough about this pretty much enough about this virus now to realise it doesn't affect the working population, pretty much the healthy working population. It doesn't hardly affects them, you know. And so we have to be careful, of course, and shield the people who need shielding. But you can't lock down the entire economy. And even quarantining from countries that, you know, are no worse than us, it's killing industries and it's killing jobs. And we shouldn't be doing it. I just feel they're trying to cover up for early mistakes they've made, which, let's be honest, they had like hundreds of thousands of people coming into the country months after it was declared a pandemic, and now they're trying to say, "All right, we're doing all we can now." No, it's too late now. It's too late. You know, so,
it is.
Back then we didn't know enough about the virus. They should have been very, you know, worried back then and shut the borders down back then because you didn't know enough about it. Now we know enough about it. They're trying to go overboard in the quarantine, trying to make up for previous. I just am quite annoyed by it. It's not only spoiling people's lives, you know, livelihoods. It's done. I think it's been politicised hugely, and I just think it's really bad. I know. So ill thought out.
Yeah, this was a topic we discussed yesterday, you know, and obviously some of the conspiracy theorists really got going, and you know, said that it was all a plan by China to gain domination, but that's crap, really. But at the end of it, I feel it's been knee jerk policy making on the hoof, and they're just reacting to events rather than shaping them. At the end of it, I think the message is loud and clear. On social distancing, wearing masks in shops or in places where there's a lot of movement makes an awful lot of sense. Social distancing, and if everyone does that, then yeah, we do. We will minimise the spread of the thing. But at the end of the day, if you carry on locking people down, we're going to go back to the Stone Age. You know, we're going to go back to a point where property values will plummet, food prices, inflation will soar, food will become scarce, hard to get hold of. So at the end of it, we'll all be unhealthy anyway because we can't eat properly. So we'll start dying from other diseases. And at the end of it, I think enough's enough. You know, we'll adopt the social distancing measures, but let's get on with our lives, let's get the economy back to normal and get cracking. I'm with you on that, totally.
Yeah. Okay, what are we talking about? Companies on the
channel. Okay, so a gaming theme today, and I believe you're talking to one of the CEOs of the one of the companies I'm going to cover a little later on. Want to talk about Gfinity first of all? Gfin
Episode. Yeah, I'm talking to John Hope from the podcast there, and I do hold stock in the company. I like the company. I like what John's doing. It came on the podcast. I was so, they've always been on my watch list. But I've been so jaded by the previous management, just that they're overspend and their big losses. And even when John came on and he told us, you know, told me and podcast listeners what he was doing, and he was correcting that he was doing the right thing, I almost didn't listen. And it took my three times for him to come on the podcast before I got it. I thought, well, hang on a sec. He is actually aiming towards profitability, and he's restated it over and over again. Q1 profitability, cut costs massively, and they've identified new revenue streams. They've got three revenue streams now, so it's really going in the right direction. And gaming is massive. It's going to be massive.
It's vast, isn't it?
We may not get it, right? My kids, I got kids who are in this space. I mean, they're 10 and 7. They are obsessed. I said that all they want to do all day, after restrict them, is play games, Fortnite and all this stuff. And if they're not, if I take them off that, they want a bit of telly. They don't watch traditional telly. They basically press the YouTube button on the app on the TV and watch people, YouTubers playing games. It's like, this is going to be huge. People don't understand it. It's not a fad. The terrestrial TV doesn't exist anymore. It's dead to them. They don't care. So it's going to be huge. Yeah.
Gaming TV, digital TV, streaming TV, it's all merging into one. And Gfin, I mean, you're right on the gaming front. I mean, I don't do the gaming, but lots of people in my family do. My son does, and they game online. And a lot of my son's mates are hugely successful in what they do, work wise, business wise, everything else. And they all just love this gaming. It's a huge marketplace. And Gfinity, the esports is. It's a marketplace that, had I not found out a bit about it, I wouldn't have believed the size of this marketplace. 2.2 billion gamers worldwide. And in 2020 already, you know, since John Clark has been at the helm, they've had a, excuse the pun, a game-changing year. The Viacom partnership announced they've raised $2.2 million earlier in the year. E-Cricket Challenge, E-Premier League, partnership with BT Sport, multi-year F1 agreement, and of course, as we discussed last time, this agreement with Abu Dhabi Motorsports, the esports virtual racing partnership, which is absolutely huge, and this has just progressed the group. On August the 5th, Gfinity announced the launch of the Abu Dhabi Motorsports V10R League, which has attracted big racing names already, and of course they had some of the top racing drivers racing in the league. And of course, you know, there are all sorts of rights to sell, there's advertising to sell into this, and there's a subsequent announcement on a couple of days ago from Gfinity Digital Media, which announced a partnership with Venatus in April this year, already generated $200,000 in revenue from on-site advertising. And indeed, John Clark has said that, and I'm sure he'll reiterate this when he comes on later, the Gfinity Digital Media is expected to contribute $2 million $2 million in revenues in the current financial year to June 2021.
Yes, yeah, so that's halfway through the next year. It'll already have generated $2 million. Yeah. This is a revenue stream. It didn't exist 12 months back. We didn't.
Exactly.
I mean, the last management didn't even look at this. And John has done an amazing job. But it's saying, hang on a sec, we are at the centre of this game. We can get revenue from our digital media business, and they're doing it. They're doing it very well. I mean, if you look at the page reviews, it's gone up massively from like 1.5 million to over 10 million in 12 months, you know. So and that'll continue now. So because they're starting to really sort it out and get it. It's a part of their. Like I said, you know, when you discover a revenue stream and go from zero to 2 million within, say, 18 months. That's a real coup for the CEO.
I mean, to be able to sell advertising into this network, and since April they've generated £200,000, you know, in new revenue, you know, from a revenue stream that simply didn't exist before.
Say, this is only a third. Not even a third. I mean, if you look at financially, it's not even a third of their business. So, you know, the two other thirds as well are still generating revenue. So this is just a new revenue stream to add on to those two. You know, so impressive.
And as we talked this morning, of course, just they've announced today a new virtual motorsports website, racinggames.gg is the web address, so you can go there and get involved. But the virtual racing online is just huge, and I'm sure this will reach out into all aspects of motorsport. I don't know if you follow MotoGP at all, but my goodness me, there was the Austrian MotoGP at the weekend, and there was a huge crash there, and Valentino Rossi, the MotoGP, you know, legend. How he avoided being killed is a miracle. It's quite the most incredible thing. Google it. Google Austrian MotoGP crash, and you'll see what I mean.
I've seen it. Do you know what? That's one thing with esports. You want to have you see when people are getting killed or knocked by.
So well, there is that
part of the excitement, I suppose. But it's not nice. But I don't know if you've seen how good. If you look at their V10R League. Have a look at this. It's a video of it, and it's based on a designed sort of white label sort of racing track and cars. But they're phenomenal. I released a video on the weekend just showing the graphics. And there's not a lot of difference between that now and real racing. The quality is superb.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it? I did walk in once when my son Tom was playing a game a while back, and thought there was a TV program running, but suddenly realised he was playing a game. Yeah. And the graphics are astonishing. I mean, coming from my day with sort of Pac-Man and Space Invaders and all the rest of it, it's really quite something. So it's a huge growth area, and also there are some real British success stories here, you know, which and the two companies I'm going to talk about now, as well as Gfinity, really are at the forefront of that. So it's exciting times for Gfinity.
Yeah, and I think what people understand is that this now is valued at sub 30 million market cap, which is nothing. And you can always say, you know, these kind of things, if it was in America, it'd be highly rated. They are. I was looking at the valuations of companies out there, esports companies, and they're like 10 times, 10, 20 times revenue, and they're loss making. Now, Gfinity. If they were 10 times revenue, they'd be about 70 million, and they're about to go into profitability. What that means is they're generating real value. And I've always, for a long time, I try to study why share prices go up. And there's two reasons why, apart from being a takeover, but two reasons why a share price rises. One, there's the potential to generate value. So a company releases news that says, oh, listen, we've just done, for example, let's say a resource company, we've just drilled some samples and they got good grades. And so they said, okay, so we can up our economic model of what we will be delivering if we drill it out and do a mine, but a lot of money has to go into that. So they're still not generating value, but they are generating potential real value in the future. Now, when you start generating cash and a profit, that's real value. So there's only two ways, you know, potential value and real value. GFinity are going to profitability in Q1. That means they will not be loss-making. That means their cash buffers will be growing and they'll be generating real value. On top of that, against the backdrop of esports and gaming, which is a massive industry, and I think this company could re-rate hugely if they carry on doing with John. So even though I've been in quite early, I've more than doubled my money on this, I'm still holding because I think it's got a long way to go, you know?
I agree. Well, I've been watching this too. It's on my watch list, and it nearly hit my target buying price of 2.6p the other week, but not quite. So
let me say one thing: the opportunity, because I think what's holding it back a little bit is that when they did a fundraise, this always helped them though get towards profitability, and they won't need to do a further fundraise. Is because they released one for one warrants, you know, for the fundraise. So there's a lot of warrants out there. They've exercised about £326,000 worth of warrants in the last couple of months, which will help them, you know, help them funding wise. But they've got about 1.9 million to go. So that's going to help them, but it'll be a drag on the price because you get some people just selling, you know, selling at the market, the profit, take quick profit because they're at one pence. So they're doing very well on those. So that may drag the market. That will present opportunity. But of course, it's temporary. Once those warrants are gone, or the people are, there's two big chunks I know out there that are being held.
Even if the warrants haven't gone, if they hit profitability, I think that'll be academic because I think then investors will just look at it and think, do you know what? It doesn't matter about those warrants. This company's making a profit now. And you know, maybe 6 months' time, you know, any worries about dilution will be null and void because the company will be at a different level and it'll be generating so much cash, it'll be able to fund its own development. And that's where you want to get to.
The share price has moved quite nicely, but I still think it's a drag on the price just to have done the warrants. So I think once they're out of the way, it'll start to really move. Do you think you'd like what's next, Joe?
Okay, well, moving on from that, GFinity, the partnership with Venatus was also with a company called Bidstack, and of course we've discussed Bidstack many times. And I'm actually quite excited. Well, I'm very excited, in fact, by the recovery potential of Bidstack because the company has really, in share price terms, been on its knees. It raised a large chunk of money earlier on this year, and it announced interim results early this week. Revenue of 300,000 against 30,000 previously, and through the raise, it basically has 6 million cash at the bank, so the company is well funded. Now, the reason I believe the share price has been so low for so long is that there is a well-known share tipping website has engaged in what can be only described as a character assessment of James Draper, and I said this earlier on this week when I sort of looked at the BizSat results, and James Draper predicted, I think last year incorrectly, that the company would be making revenues from the agreements that it had in place. And of course, the technology Bidstack has is to place native advertising, live streaming advertising into online gaming platforms through different platforms around the world. And of course, in doing so, they've created a huge opportunity for advertisers around the world to tap into this market. The potential is vast. I mean, it's something like 140 billion and growing all the time. And we've already discussed the amount of gamers worldwide. And obviously,
we talk about market share. We have to understand this. Someone just asked me, and they're always asking me because I was a very big fan of Bidstack at the start. I still like the tech. I still like it, and I haven't changed my mind on tech. Now, I'll say this to this several people. If I keep getting asked this, so you ramped it. I didn't ramp it. I was really enthusiastic about it. I really liked the company. I took a nice position in the company. Now, when the story changes, you've got to change your mind investment-wise, you know? And like I said, when we had those targets out, which was about $6 million for the first year of them being listed, that was amazing, I thought. And I thought, wow. And then looked at the other target, it was at $20 million the year after. Now, they achieved nowhere near that. Nowhere near. No. It was like 36 grand or something ridiculous. And you realise, oh, hang on a sec, something's not going right here. And so when you get proof of concept, and this is a new kind of tech, it's been done before, but it was too, you know, but it didn't take off. It was bought by Microsoft, still didn't work, but a proof of concept is needed. So, does it work? First and foremost, you've got to prove that. Is there a market for it? That's the second proof of concept. So, does it work? We think it works. It's been put into most games. They've shown it on some games and Codemasters games. So we know it sort of works. Is the demand for? I don't know. That's the stumbling block at the moment. They seem to be a long time monetizing this. And like I say, you know, you can't say I'm making this up because they've missed, you know, their revenue targets. That's not to say they don't like the company. What I'm saying is, it's taken a longer time to monetize this than they thought.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought as well. And so if people are still hanging on there saying, well, I've been potential to earn loads of money. No, the issue is they aren't monetizing it at the moment. I'm not saying they won't. It won't be huge. It could, of course it could. But at the moment, they're not. That's what we know. And of course the market's big, but they can't all place those, they've got to look for, I mean, they've got other things going on, of course, they said. But their core... is putting those ads into, you know, naturally occurring areas in sports games. So they can't put ads in things like Fortnite or stuff like that because it wouldn't work. It's got to be natural to the game, non-intrusive. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's got to be like football games, racing games, all that. So there's plenty of opportunity there. But again, all I'm saying is it's taken a long time to monetize this. So what is the issue? We don't really know. Is it just they can't get the inventory or is the tech not up to speed? We don't know. So that's my issue. But I still like it. I like the idea of it. But I just want it to... I want some, you know, see, when it starts getting some traction here, revenue-wise, you can't say, and you know, the market's 180 billion because that's not the target market. The target market is only those games that would have those naturally occurring adverts, basically.
So
that's a lot smaller. But I still, enough to make lots of money, of course it is.
I think there are a number of factors supporting the case to move back into the stock now. But the targets were missed, and obviously, fundamentally, at the end of it, this company's got to make money, and it's got to start to deliver on the revenue potential that we as investors believe it will deliver. But it is making progress in that direction. In the half year results, James said that the company had already undertaken test campaigns with Activision, Audi, BBC, MG Cars, Penguin Books, Shell, Subway, Unilever, Vodafone, Volkswagen, Warner Brothers, and a raft of other
exactly. Other so major they're doing tests with people.
And also, James has attracted onto the advisory board what reads like a who's who of the gaming industry.
Yeah, and they're all impressed with it. Of course they are. That's why we like it. We all like it because the proof of concept of does it work is there. Can you monetize it? Is there demand for it? Like I said, you've got all these test cases, right? And but yet the revenue isn't coming through. So what's the block in the pipeline here? And I'm watching it, and I like the share prices. It seems to have hit a little bottom here, and it could rally up on good news. But we're getting a lot of rumour. There's a lot of people following this. I mean, you know, it's an exciting stock. A lot of people follow this. So it rallies on rumour. The trouble is, when you get some financial results through, then it tends to dip, you know? And I said, as yet, I won't be getting back in it until I see that traction in revenue. If they start getting revenue, and they start, that, to me, that's the second part of that concept proved. But as yet, they're not getting that revenue. That's what I need to see, you know, and a loss, essentially, a road, a map to sort of almost break even by generating growth in revenue, you know? So, yeah.
Okay, well, further to it, the there have been a number of screenshots banded around on the... And of course, the screenshots are confirming EA Games titles. You know, so we know they're being tested at the very highest level by the leading games company. Also, the brokers have started to take note of the progress. There's a broker note from Staffel out recently, discounted from a 20p discounted cash flow target. Stifel put out an initial 8.5p price target. They say there's massive pent-up demand for the technology and also for the advertisers wanting to reach this marketplace. So once they get it right, it will be huge. And James Draper has said, and I know he said this before, but in every statement he's made this year, he said that the revenues will be very significantly second half of the year weighted. So, yeah, he's got to deliver. But the first sign, the first indication we get from the company that the revenues are starting to come in, I think this I think we will see a huge re-rate, and I think we'll go back to where we were, possibly 20p where we were last year.
Yeah, no, hopefully. I mean, like I said, if revenues do start coming in, then it will be transit. I like James. I like the tech. I like what he's doing. He's doing a very good job. When I say he's doing an excellent job of attracting huge talent. Now, you can't attract huge talent just on BS, on mirrors and smokescreens. So they like it. I've talked to some of the guys as well, and they are, like I said, they're very experienced guys in this field. They know what they're talking about, and they like this tech. So, it's good, and we all know it's good. But when I start seeing that revenue traction, I think it will fly. But as yet, it's not happening. You could take a position, of course, and wait, or you could wait for the sort of thing. It'll jump up. But there are lots of people, of course, pumping this on any sort of rumor. All I need is to see some evidence of revenue, growth. Because I love it. I do love the tech. Like I said, I was a huge proponent of this and a promoter of this company. And it soured a bit because, and I got blamed saying I was pumping it. No, I still like the company. I still like it. I just don't have a position anymore. Because they missed targets. That was why. You've got to change your mind when the story changes a bit.
Absolutely, yeah. That's the thing. That's the worst sin you can commit in investing is to just stick to it and say, I know this company's going to come good. No, it's going to come good. I think with Bidstack, I mean, I'm a shareholder too, and I bought in at the recent raising level. So I really do believe in the tech, and I think it's got a long way to go. But yeah, it's not without risk, and clearly it may transpire that they ultimately can't deliver, but I think the odds are in their favour, and I think certainly given the evidence that's been amassed so far this year, I do think we'll see a transformational second half for Bidstack.
Okay, cool. No, I like it. I just hopefully they'll do well there. Because I like James. I like chatting to James. He's an interesting guy. And okay, let's. What's next then, Al? Anything else?
Okay. Yes. Well, the final one in the gaming trilogy is Yorkshire-based Team 17 Group, TM17, and this is a company that just keeps on giving and giving. And we've spoken about this before, and I think you were uncomfortable with the rating, with the racy price earnings ratio. And
I wasn't uncomfortable. I understand that's the way it is, and I wouldn't invest in that level because I think it's had a massive. It's an excellent company. It's done it very well, and I've missed out on it. And so I don't know how far to go now, but I just think I should have been in this company at almost 2019. Go back this time last year. Yep. Did we talk about it this time last year?
We spoke about this on August the 13th last year, and the share price was just over £1.70.
I'm a fool then. What? August the 13th? Hang on.
Yeah. I have my notes.
August 13th is it was 262. The price was Team 17.
Okay, 262, and here we are today at £7 a share. So
I was a fool. I obviously wasn't paying attention to the gaming sector a lot there, or big companies. I think sometimes I don't pay attention to the game bigger companies, but there we go. I've got to narrow my focus sometimes, because there's too many companies out there to look at, and I've done very well at looking at small cap companies. And when I sort of start to wander beyond that, I lose track and focus. I do it to keep focus.
I think when a company gets so far, then a lot of people sell out, and then it's got to move to the next level. And understanding how it continues that exponential growth is
270. It was, sorry, not 170. 270. That's right. Yeah.
270. Okay. So 270 up to.
But still a good return. Cracking return.
Yeah. That's it. A great return. And, of course, the company's based in Wakefield in Yorkshire. The chief executive and founder, Debbie Beswick, has worked in the industry for 35 years. And they're an indie gaming developer, and they focus on premium games that people pay to play. Hundreds of titles. These include Worms, Overcooked, The Escapist, Genesis Alpha 1, which I'm sure will mean something to those that play it. I don't play games, but there we go. They've got partnerships with numerous major gaming sort of houses and gaming companies. Made great progress this year, and you just look at that share price chart. I mean, it's just relentless growth all the way. May the 12th, Jennifer Lawrence, the non-exec, bought £10,000 of the shares in the company, so she's well ahead on that already. They issued a pre-close trading statement on June the 16th for the trading overview of the 6 months to June. Said they had very strong sales traction during the period, above expected demand for the back catalogue, and also enhanced earnings on key franchise titles. They have a very solid pipeline going forward for the second half of the year, but they've said, given the fact that COVID has generated more revenue than expected, they say at this juncture is still too early to make a judgment on just how much they will generate in the second half of the year. But this is typical of the company. It's cautious going forward. It's cautious in its statements, and to date, it's always delivered. So I'd say here the trend is your friend. And then the most recent announcement is a huge publishing agreement with Tencent, who are the Chinese corporation, absolutely massive, and they've developed a game called Crown Trick.
I thought you were going to say that Tencent. When you said Tencent, is that the younger brother of 50 Cent?
No, Tencent, the Chinese media company, who are just vast, and you know, any company that gets a partnership with them, it's going to be mega big. So Debbie Beswick and her team continue to deliver, and the company is now worth $900 million, it's getting on for the billions, and the growth shows no signs of slowing down. It's trading on a P/E ratio of just over 50, so that's pretty racy, but they deliver. And I'm sure if this company had was dual listed on NASDAQ too, then it would probably be trading at well over a billion. So there you go. But again, it just keeps on delivering. They have a very strong position in the gaming sector, and they're very good at fostering and generating partnerships with small gaming houses and bringing in indie gaming developers. And given the growth that we've already discussed in that market with Gfinity, and obviously you know the market that Bidstack are trying to open up, 140 billion worldwide, there is plenty of scope for Team 17 to continue to grow. So TM17.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Yeah, it's good. I missed out on that. It was a good call, Al. Very good call by you. At last. I mean, how many years have you been on the podcast?
Years and years. Yes. Yeah, I'll put a blue tick on the wall for that one then.
Yeah.
Red crosses up there.
Make sure you put it as 270, not 170. All right.
270. Okay.
I know your trick.
Yeah. 270. Yeah.
All right. Cheers, Al. Thanks, Al. And we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Jess. Speak to you next week. All the best.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Gfinity, down at the moment actually, 6%, or 6.4%, 3.65. It's had a good rise of late. Of course, a bit of consolidation maybe. Maybe some warrant holders cashing in their warrants because a good profit from 1p. But listen, if you listen to John on the podcast, a long way to go yet. At four, Avacta Group, up 6.16% to 181. At three, Supply Up Me Capital, down 3.85% to 0.625. At two, 7 Digital Group, up 30% to 3.2. And at one, Omega Holdings, up 44.5% to 17.34. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Salt Lake Potash Holdings in Company. Looks like Fidelity International has gone up to 10.78% from 9% that they had that's after the placing, of course. So a big company there, I think. Billions in... 411 billion in assets under management. At four, Power Metals Australia. Gold JV Update Historical Reports. At 3, Wishbone Gold, funding raised to expand exploration program. At 2, Nuformix, results of pre-clinical pilot study in IPF for NXP004. And at 1, it's Gfinity to launch new virtual racing website. And I spoke to John on the podcast. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.